This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bulgave. According to director Sam Peckinpah, the 1952 classic Shane was the best Western ever made. He said it changed violence in Westerns forever. The movie, directed by George Stevens, won an Academy Award for Best Cinematography in 1953. It's now out in DVD with restored color and sound, and a commentary track by the director's son, George Stevens Jr., talking with the associate director of the movie, Ivan Moffat. The film follows the adventure of a lone gunman, Shane, played by Alan Ladd, as he turns in his six-shooter to help out the Starrett family, homesteaders in the Wyoming wilderness, who are embroiled in a confrontation with a gang of local land barons. Although Shane tries to leave his violent past behind him, he comes to the aid of the homesteaders and picks up his guns once again. By the end of the film, Shane rides off into the sunset, a lone rider once again.
I gotta be going on.
Why, Shane?
Man has to be what he is, Julie. Can't break the mold. I tried it and it didn't work for me.
We want you, Shane.
Joey, there's no living with a killing. There's no going back from one. Right or wrong, it's a brand. A brand sticks. There's no going back. Now you run on home to your mother and tell her. Tell her everything's all right. There aren't any more guns in the valley.
George Stevens was one of the leading directors of his era. His films include The Diary of Anne Frank, A Place in the Sun, and Giant. George Stevens Jr. started working with his father on films when he was 17. He went on to become the founder and director of the American Film Institute, where he produced documentaries, awards galas, including the Kennedy Center Honors, and was behind the restoration of many film classics, including his father's works. Stevens also produced and directed a documentary about his father's life, George Stevens, A Filmmaker's Journey. Stevens had read Jack Schaefer's novel Shane as a young teenager. I asked him if he was the person who introduced his father to the story.
I believe I was. I was working with him that summer. It was my first job, really, and I had two jobs. One was to, quote, break down Theodore Dreiser's An American Tragedy, listing all the incidents and scenes and characters, because my father was preparing to work on the script of the movie based on that novel that became A Place in the Sun with Montgomery Clift and Elizabeth Taylor and Shelley Winters. And the other part of my job was to read material that came from the studios, from the studio, Paramount, books and scripts. And there were a lot of what I remember as a 17-year-old, what I disdainfully called love stories that didn't interest me. But I did read Jack Schaefer's small novel. And the next night I went over and we went in my father's bedroom and he was in bed, and I said, you know, this is a really good story. I said, I think you ought to read it. And he said, tell me the story. And so I remember pacing around his bedroom trying to tell him the story of Shane. And of course I told it as a 17-year-old would see it, and he added levels and dimensions that made it into a quite extraordinary film.
What do you think he saw in the movie? And I'm thinking that your father made Shane after coming home from World War II.
Yeah, he talked about coming home from war. He'd been away for 3.5-4 years, and his combat motion picture unit, they'd been at D-Day and the liberation of Paris and the liberation of the concentration camp at Dachau. And he'd seen a lot of combat. And he came home and had seen one movie in 4 years. And he started going and looking at pictures. And he saw Westerns, and he said they were using six guns like they were guitars. You know, they'd shoot at people, and they'd fall down, and they'd get up again and start shooting. And one thing he wanted to do in this film was to show the power of a single bullet and what it does to the human form. And that, of course, was done so memorably in the scene in front of the saloon where Jack Palance shoots the little Southerner, played by Elisha Cook Jr.
Well, when people shot in Westerns, I noticed they usually fell forward before Shane. They'd kind of fall on their face. And in that scene, and in the two other scenes, there are only three scenes in which people get shot in Shane. In the other scenes, people fall backward really violently. It's such a different effect. That must have been a big break with tradition. Did your father use any kind of trick technique to make people fall so fast backwards?
Well, I remember the day that scene was shot. It was meant to be shot on a Saturday, and the street wasn't wet enough. So we called off shooting, and my father had them water the street all night, that little street in front of that that town with buildings only on one side. And they buried a mattress in this muddy street, and they put a harness around Elisha Cook's chest and connected it to a wire and had three strong prop men or grips holding the handles on the wire. And when he was shot, they pulled him and he snapped back and fell into the mud.
Huh. Did your father also experiment with the sound of gunshots?
Yes. He would be shooting, had them shooting guns in trash barrels and, to give the sound a kind of ferocity that a gun can have. I mean, today, it sounds quaint, really, to think back today where the Dolby sound and sounds are so exaggerated and, it's so deafening to go to a movie theater and watch the previews. But then this was a real enhancement of the sound, and to use it only occasionally, it had such an impact when it was the first gunshot you heard in the film. Actually, the second. There's a little scene where Shane is teaching Jody, the little boy, how to shoot, but very little gunplay. But when it comes, it's very dramatic.
The Wyoming landscape in the movie is so pervasive. It's almost as if it's a character in the film. I'm curious how conscious your father was in the cinematography and setting shots up that those Wyoming mountains would have such presence in every shot possible.
I remember when we flew up to scout locations and we'd drive out in station wagons and Dad would walk along, the hills and in the valley in front of those Teton Mountains until he found just the right place. And part of it was that there was a tree, two trees that on a hill that kind of became a signature, that every time horses came through those trees and down the hill, you immediately knew you were headed for town. And then the town was built on the street in front of the Tetons. And he used long photo-length lenses to photograph much of Shane, including the scenes of the actors in just normal scenes, not in landscape scenes. And it had the effect of pulling those three Teton peaks up closer, and it gave them that looming presence over the scenes that were taking place in front of it.
I love Jack Palance in this film. Just brilliant casting. He was a New York stage actor then. Had he even been out west before showing up to shoot Shane?
I don't know if he'd been out west. He was in a very good film called Panic in the Streets that Elia Kazan directed. And Kazan obviously had seen Palance in the theater. But when he came out to work on this film, Jack Palance was then a rather mysterious man, and he had these extraordinary dark looks. And even on days when he wasn't called to work, Jack would be out on the set, and he'd be doing two things. One, he'd be getting on and off his horse, the horse he'd been given to use in the film, and he would be standing and drawing his pistol out of his holster. And day by day, he would do that. And after a couple of months, the Western experts that we had, the cowboys out there, said his fast draw was in the league with the best. And he brought to it such he worked hard on the role and brought to it such a menace that I think it's really an extraordinary performance, and it showed signs that he was going to be an important actor in the future.
You said he was a mysterious man. Is that how you felt about him when you met him?
Well, he was. He was big and, you know, unusual looking. But as you got to know him, he was, you know, and as we've seen later with the Billy Crystal movie and other things, he's a man with a wonderful sense of humor. But I think he was into that role. I think that he's a method actor, and he was out there night and day living as a gunfighter.
Let's talk about the costumes. How strict was your father about period detail in Chain, in just all areas of the film?
He wrote a memo to the crew, particularly the production designers, the costumers. He didn't really like the word costumes. He used to call it clothing because he thought costumes kind of led people to be elaborate. And he said that if somebody came from another planet and landed at that on the set, that we'd like them to feel that this was Wyoming in 1879. And I remember Van Heflin had a shirt that he'd worn in another film where he played Jim Bridger, a Western figure. And he wanted to wear this shirt. And he brought it in and showed it to Dad. And Dad looked at the label, and it said Abercrombie and Fitch. And it was just a very contemporary-looking shirt. And if you look at Chain, and instantly the restored print that is used to make this DVD, you know, the color and texture are back. The clothes are worn. The people didn't go to the store every day, and they wore clothes till they wore out. And I think it gives a great sense of reality to what life was like for the homesteaders out in Wyoming in that time.
My guest is George Stevens, Jr. He's the founder of the American Film Institute and the son of the late director George Stevens, whose movies include I Remember Mama, A Place in the Sun, Giant, and Shane. Shane has just been released on DVD. The DVD version includes commentary from George Stevens, Jr., who worked with his father on the film. Let's take a break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. We're back with George Stevens, Jr. He's the founder of the American Film Institute. His father was the director of such movies as Giant, A Place in the Sun, and the Western classic Shane. Shane is just out on DVD. I'd like to talk about the restoration of Shane, but first you should probably explain that Shane was shot with something called a three-strip Technicolor process, which was new way back when in the 50s. What did that process involve and involve for the shooting?
The three-strip Technicolor process relied upon huge cameras. You know, they were big cameras so that three strips of film could run through them parallel at the same time. And then you had to put the sound blimps so the noisy camera didn't interfere with the dialogue. And so there were these large cameras. And when you think of the fight scenes in Shane and all of those, you know, in the saloon with so many small cuts, that this was not, as it is today, a cinematographer with a camera on his shoulder grabbing little pieces of film. Each one was moving this big camera around and setting it up and lighting it. Again, the film speed was much slower today, so it needed more light. But the result was that with the three strips of film going through the camera representing the different colors, they were later combined to make the color film. Later on, Eastman developed a process which is used today, a single-strip process for color film. But this was in the days of the three-strip Technicolor. And most people feel that that nothing has matched the quality and the wonderful resolution of color that the Technicolor process had.
Now, when you worked on the restoration of the picture, I know you've produced documentaries about your father. You certainly mm-hmm. thought long and hard about your father mm-hmm. and his techniques. Were there any surprises or new angles or new insights into his technique that you noticed?
I'll tell you one thing. You have to be careful when you're preserving a film, because the technology is so good now. You can do so much with sound. You can do so much with color. Fortunately, Shane is a picture that's been part of my life since it was made, and I know what it looks like, and I know what it's supposed to sound like. I worry about technicians, because there was one stage when the technicians had done some sound work. They'd cleaned up the sound, sonically cleaned the sound, and it took the life out of it. It took the sound of the creek that's gurgling in the background out. So people who take on the responsibility of preserving films have to remember that their job is to try and restore the film as close to what the original filmmaker produced, not to get little ideas of their own and say, oh, I'm going to make it better or different.
My guest is George Stevens, Jr. He's the son of the great late director George Stevens, director of such films as I Remember Mama, A Place in the Sun, Giant, and Shane. Shane is just out on DVD. George Stevens, Jr. Has a commentary on the new DVD restored version and worked on the restoration. After you worked with your father on Shane, on Giant, on a number of his films, on The Diary of Anne Frank, you worked in television in your own right. You worked for Jack Webb for a while mm-hmm. on Dragnet. Now, how cool is that? What did you do?
That was great. I'd just gotten out of the Air Force. I'd been a motion picture officer in the Air Force, and I needed a job. And I was fortunate to get a job with Jack Webb, who then was making the hottest show on television, Dragnet, in which he starred as Sergeant Joe Friday. And I worked with Jack on another series he did called Pete Kelly's Blues and two movies that he made. And Jack was at the other end of the spectrum from my father in his approach to his work. They both did fine work, but Jack was... Dad shot a lot of film, shot a lot of angles, took his time. Jack was Mr. Efficiency. He even used teleprompters. He and Ben Alexander, the other character, would do so skillfully. They'd have him stuck in the sets, and they'd shoot 10 pages of dialogue in 3 hours. So it was a wonderful learning experience for me to work with Jack.
Was that seductive for you then, to see this other end of the spectrum?
It was. I always was more drawn to my father's way of doing it, but I learned, and it enabled me to direct Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Peter Gunn and the shows that I directed with an efficiency that I wouldn't have learned from my father in the latter stages of his career.
You founded the American Film Institute in 1967. Was the initial mission of the Institute to restore and preserve film?
It was. Really had several. One was film education and training, the preservation of films and the exhibition of films. And at the time we started it, half the films that had been made since the beginning of film in the United States were lost, missing, or had been destroyed. And it was a huge job to try and rescue these missing films. And then we were thinking about the films of the teens and the 20s and the 30s. What never occurred to me was that while we were doing that work, that what were then quite recent films like Shane and A Place in the Sun were deteriorating in the studio library. And so here we are restoring, I find out later on that here I am restoring the films of my father's that never occurred to me would be in danger. But the AFI effort at film preservation and restoration, I think, was a very significant act, because it wasn't that the AFI did it all, but the AFI was able to energize and give focus to the other museums and archives who were willing to do the work and were doing good work.
George Stevens, Jr., thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, I enjoyed it. It was a great pleasure.
George Stevens Jr. is the founder of the American Film Institute. He provides commentary on the new DVD reissue of his father's 1952 Western, Shane.